We do appreciate you joining. I know you're a busy man.
I'm far too busy for a podcast on my own website.
Welcome to the MMQB podcast with Andy Benoit, NFL analyst for Sports Illustrated and the MMQB, and Robert Klemko. Robert, what's your title? Are you like, senior executive vice feature writing editor extraordinaire?
I'm literally the lowest writer you can be. I'm the opposite of what you just said.
Well, I don't think that's true because you're on the new format of the website. Your picture's right there in the middle.
Really?
You haven't seen it?
Oh, I guess I didn't notice that. You know what, Andy? I'm so buried in the work that I just don't notice those sorts of things.
Yeah, and the work you've been buried in lately, you're on the MMQB training camp tour right now. You've been to the Atlantic coast. I believe you guys are in, the southeastern part of the U.S., kind of like the panhandle area?
Yeah, we did most of Florida, although we skipped Miami, just because it was so far south, and it's tough to drive in the van. I'm headed personally to West Virginia where the Saints are right now.
Okay, well, very good. And I know you and Peter King, who we know where he ranks among the writers, you guys had an excellent conversation about the top rookie quarterbacks this year. You've been to the Titans camp, you've been to Tampa Bay. So we're going to share that conversation that you and Peter had later in the show. But first, I wanted to talk Arian Foster with you. And before that, because you're so tapped into the Russell Wilson world, and you wrote a very excellent piece on this before Wilson signed his contract, I want to talk about the contract with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just signed the big extension, and, you know, you see, reactions all over the board. Too much, too little, just right. To me, I'd say it was a great contract for both sides. I think it was very team-friendly. Wilson did not get the money that he wanted to be the highest paid quarterback of the moment. And it's important to make that distinction because if he was the highest paid quarterback, just edging Aaron Rodgers, you figure Aaron Rodgers is going to get a contract extension soon. Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, Andrew Luck, and everybody was just kind of waiting in the wings to see what Russell did. So he would only have been the highest paid quarterback for a matter of months. But with all that said, a comment made by Doug Whaley is very pertinent in this discussion. He basically said, because we're not going to have a 2-14 season, because we have a good defense, because we have a solid offensive supporting cast, we are in quarterback purgatory because we're not going to get the top pick, and any quarterback we pick is sort of a crapshoot, and we're just stuck with, you know, what we have. And I think that any time you do not retain a quarterback like Russell Wilson, and you could argue that Russell Wilson is top 5 or top 10 or top 15 or whatever, but a quarterback who has led you to one Super Bowl victory and to the doorstep of another, anytime that you don't retain a guy like that, I think that you are dooming your franchise. And the price that they got for him in that line of thinking, I think it was great for the franchise.
Yeah, and Doug Whaley, the GM of the Buffalo Bills, who you're talking about there and their situation with Matt Cassel and Tyrod Taylor and E.J. Manuel, it's funny because you could argue that the Bills are the Seahawks without Russell Wilson right now. I mean, they have maybe not quite the Seattle level of defense, but a team that's good enough defensively to win with that side of the ball being the focal point, to really lean on that side of the ball. They have LeSean McCoy in the running game, and they're kind of in that almost like that team that barely misses the NBA playoffs and has no ping pong balls in the draft lottery, that purgatory that he talked about. So because of that, I think he makes a great point. If you're Seattle, you can't let Russell Wilson get away, because then where are you going to find another QB just like that?
Yeah, I think it would take an enormous amount of arrogance for a coach or a GM to let go of a Russell Wilson and say, we'll find somebody else. We can compete with this defense and this running back and this running game. You might have been able to do that with a powerhouse team 20 years ago, but I think the way that the game has changed and the scarcity of the quarterback position and just how hard it is to develop these guys who are growing up in simpler and simpler offenses in college football, it would be extremely arrogant to say, Russell Wilson would franchise him in 2016. And then 2017, if he doesn't agree to our terms, then we let him walk. I couldn't imagine a team doing anything like that going forward.
I was surprised that Wilson settled for that amount, considering he wanted to be the highest paid QB in the league. That's $31.7 million fully guaranteed. He'll most likely see a lot more than that. But, Robert, do you have any idea how much of a factor it was that he was only set to make $1.5 million this year? Because if he were to wait it out and give himself another year and go for that big contract, he also would have been playing for ultimately $15 to $16 million less per year based on what he would have made this year. You know, he's losing a year of earning power by not signing the deal right away. Do you think that was a major factor in him agreeing to take a little less money than what I imagine he wanted in the first place?
Oh, yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, that was Seattle's big bargaining chip, is that you have a quarterback who you ask to run the football, and there's not too many of those around. This guy, I think he was just short of 900 yards rushing this season. So you're asking him to do the most dangerous thing a quarterback can do. So for him to go into a season knowing that he could have made 10 times what he was going to make, it just makes no sense for this not to get done. I think the self-imposed deadline, trying to get it done right before training camp, was a smart thing. He didn't want this dragging into training camp. And now it's a done deal. You got the quarterback. I think we can all move on.
And we will move on in just a sec. I want to ask one more thing, though. If it was such a raw deal for him, or such a high risk to play for $1.5 million in the final year of his rookie deal and be this running hybrid quarterback that he is, did he ever consider holding out for this season and saying, I'm not going to play for $1.5 million. I'm not playing at all?
I don't think that's in his makeup. I think the deadline for him was a reason to say, all right, if we don't get it done, then after this point, I'm going to start focusing on football and play for my $1.5 million. Or we get it done and everybody's happy. I think that was the point of having the deadline. Because if you have the deadline and then you decide I'm going to hold out, then the deadline is moot, because your holdout implies that there's still negotiations happening.
Well, the deadline also totally favors the Seahawks then.
Sure, yeah. But I think it favors everybody, because one of Russell's largest interests is the Seahawks, and not having those conversations spill into a time when the team is supposed to be gelling and getting better.
The only thing I hate about this time of year are injuries. And we saw one. Remember last season, guys just started between about this time and, oh, maybe mid-October. It seemed like every week there was a star player going down and recalibrating the equation across the NFL. We've already got our first one now with Arian Foster and his groin injury, and he needs surgery. He's likely out for the first half of the season. Groin injuries, those tend to spread to other parts. You got your hamstrings involved, your hip flexor involved, your low back, which he's also had trouble with. Let's assume Arian Foster's not going to play for the Texans this year, or at least not be a big factor. I think they're done. I mean, I the analyst in me doesn't like to say that about a team, but I see this already as a coup de grace for them. Do you see it differently?
That's a bold thing to say. I mean, in terms of done, are you saying a guaranteed losing season, no chance to compete in that division? I mean, I'm talking to the guy who wouldn't even predict the season opener between the Patriots and Steelers last week, and now you're just counting out an entire football team from competition because they've lost one player.
You were asking me to predict a very specific game. I don't know what's going to happen game to game. I know that in the big scheme of things, the Texans are a zone-based offense, even under Bill O'Brien, just like they were under Gary Kubiak. And Foster's versatility out of that zone system was the crux of their whole approach. Now he's out of the equation. They've got Alfred Blue at running back. He's been a short yardage back. He's not bad in man-blocking concepts, power running schemes, but that's not what this team is built to play. And they went out and they signed Brian Hoyer in the offseason, who I believe will win the starting job, because I think if they really thought Mallett were a starter, they wouldn't be having the competition to begin with. But Hoyer is a zone-based quarterback, and we saw that in Cleveland with play action and rollouts and moving pockets, bootlegs. Hoyer's a guy that needs zone play action in order to be effective. Now that zone play action game goes almost, you know, it doesn't go out the window with Foster gone, but it is significantly diminished. And I don't see how this team competes on offense to be like a wild card contender. They can go 6-10, 7-9, something like that, but they were 9-7 a year ago, and they're worse now than they were last season.
Well, I don't think you could find many people who thought they were a contender in that division before Arian Foster went down, just because of the.
But they were a wild card contender. They were at least a wild card contender.
Okay. Well, I would say if they were a wild card contender before, they aren't anymore. Arian Foster was the best player on that offense. I think the second best was DeAndre Hopkins. Now he faces, he's got a heavier burden. The replacements, you mentioned Alfred Liu, could also be Jonathan Grimes, Chris Polk. The unique thing about the zone running team, and I would be interested to hear your thoughts on this, is that I think it's easier to plug a guy in as long as he understands his job than it is a runner in a man-blocking scheme. I mean, you remember those Denver teams where it seemed like every guy, the street free agent they signed off the street for a number of years, could run for 1,300 yards in that offense, whether if it was Olandis, yeah. Gary, Mike Anderson.
I think you're right, yes. If you can find the right type of runner for a zone scheme, and we probably ought to differentiate for people what we're talking about when we say zone scheme and man scheme, and more people know about zone blocking with – they heard Alex Gibbs, who was that Broncos O-line coach back in the day. The zone blocking is where you have all five linemen basically moving laterally together, and there's different blocking principles off of it, but the running back gets the ball and reads his group of five linemen and finds a hole and makes one cut and goes. Man blocking is where it's a more specific play design, something like with the pull blocker, like counter run, power run. A lot of sweeps are out of man blocking, things where individual linemen are responsible for individual defensive guys, and that's how the blocking structure is. And it's two totally different types of running. A lot of teams can do both, but most teams pick one or the other as their foundation. So what you're saying, Robert, about, yeah, you can find another zone running back, I think that's correct. What made Foster unique, though, is there are some guys who are good zone running backs, and then there are some guys who can still create their own space no matter what the scheme. And if they're good in zone, that's all the more bonus. Foster's a guy who can create his own space. He can cut it back against the zone. He can reach the perimeter on the zones. He gives you that, again, that passing game dimension. And he breaks tackles as well. So you can go out and find a guy that will get the yards that are blocked for you. And if you're blocking it well, and Houston's been pretty good up front in the zone game, then, yeah, you might find a 1,000-yard back. But, you know, some of it's just a product of numbers. The bottom line is the Texans don't have a guy now who can surpass the numbers, be greater than that, and change the way the defense must play you and make those impact plays that swing games.
So with all that in mind, the question becomes, is the guy who can thrive in that offensive scheme already on the roster, or is there a replacement, one of these running backs, who are kind of waiting in free agency right now for this exact scenario, a star running back in the NFL to get hurt? There's Steven Jackson, Ahmad Bradshaw, Chris Johnson, Pierre Thomas, Knowshon Moreno. I don't think any of those names inspire any kind of excitement or confidence. Maybe they would have 5 or 6 years ago, but they're all options, names to look at for Houston. I wanted to move on to the tour. Both you and I are on different legs of it. Are you back in Idaho at this point?
Yeah, I just got back. I was in Napa Valley and then San Diego for a few days before that. Where are you right now? What are you doing? Do you even have time to be podcasting, Klemko?
I'm driving to West Virginia. I'm pulled over on the road so I can talk to you. And when you called me, I was interviewing Marcus Mariota with Peter, okay, outside of Titans camp. And, before we get into this little disagreement here, I think it's a perfect segue for Peter and I had a conversation right there by training camp next to the field. It's actually interrupted by Ken Wisenhunt at one point. He just walked over and started talking to Peter. But I wanted to play that to kind of kick off our training camp talk here.
We're literally standing on the practice field at Tennessee, watching Mariota sling the ball around and getting a brief respite from the sun as well.
Robert, It's really been fun this first week on the road, and it's really been educational. And one of the great things is to be at a practice like this. You know, as we record this, it's a morning practice, the fifth practice of the summer for the Tennessee Titans. We're looking at Marcus Mariota, his backup, Charlie Whitehurst, and Zach Mettenberger now taking some snaps from center. And what's educational when you come out here is I always think when I come to different camps, I say, oh my God, there's Dick LeBeau. And how is Dick LeBeau running the defense going to work with Ray Horton, who's the de facto defensive coordinator, you know? And how fast is Mariota going to show promise? So, I mean, there's so many things and so many interesting stories you come to different places, and that's one of the reasons why it's so good to go out.
Yeah, you take a look at the roster and you say, oh, I forgot that Brian Arakpo was here.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a story. That's a show.
Yeah, that's a show.
My first question, the thing I wanted to discuss after, because we just drove from Tampa.
That might have been a mistake on my itinerary. You know, you look at the map of the United States and you say, Tampa to Nashville, that's really not that far. And then 11 hours later, everybody in the van hates each other.
My question for you, as we've gone from Tampa to Tennessee back-to-back, the top two quarterbacks in the draft, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, all things being equal with the quarterbacks, which player do you think is best set up to succeed based on the supporting cast and the coaching situation?
Well, part of me would say, well, geez, Winston, obviously, because, you know, he's going to a more of a pro-style offense without having to make that adjustment. He's got Vincent Jackson, he's got Mike Evans, and he's got Austin Seferian Jenkins, three big targets. Here's a guy who threw a bunch of interceptions last year at Florida State, and he would say, but the catch radius of these guys is out of control. But thing I would worry about right now is you're starting, most likely going to start a rookie at left tackle, Donovan Smith from Penn State, and you're likely to start a rookie at right guard too, Ali Marpet from that football powerhouse of Hobart Williams Smith College. Yeah. So I worry from Tampa's point of view about the ability of Winston to stay upright. On the other hand, you know, with Tennessee, I worry about the adjustment of Mariota in this new, basically a pro-style offense. Now, I'll just say this, Robert. Last year, around the time of the draft, or last spring, I remember talking to Scott Frost, the offensive coordinator at Oregon, and he was fuming that the NFL didn't think that Marcus Mariota could play as a pocket-style quarterback. He said, the majority of times here, you watch the game. He just runs back from center, he picks out a target, you know, he goes through his progression, he goes through his reads, and he makes the throw. He's not running all the time. So, but I think it becomes a cliche when we watch guys and hear guys, you watch five plays of college football, as analysts sometimes do, and you say, oh, this guy can't do something. The one thing I would say, I'm going to say that I think that Mariota will have more success early just because I think even though his offensive line is a work in progress, he can get out of the way a little bit more. And I think his receiving core is underrated. I'm bullish on Kendall Wright. You know, even though Dorial Green-Beckham has not had a good camp so far, he's had a bunch of drops. I think that there are some weapons here that have been underused in Tennessee.
Do you think ultimately Gus Bradley and David Caldwell work out there?
Incognito. I am. I'm Richie Incognito.
Big hat on.
How you doing, Ken? Great seeing you. Robert Klemko.
How are you?
Hey, Robert.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Nice to meet you.
Man, your quarterback looks good.
Not bad.
Yeah. Man, your receivers are big.
Aren't they?
Holy cow. They all look like basketball players.
Good. Maybe we get actually catch some of this.
Yeah,
we'll see. We're working good.
Good.
Keep on doing that.
Yeah, good.
Young guy's a good kid, though, playing. He's just a great kid.
Really like being around him?
Really likes the game. Really studies hard, works hard, listens to what you say, tries to do it that way.
Yeah. Jim Wyatt told me he has not thrown an interception in five practices.
Is this the fifth practice?
This is the fifth practice, yeah.
So far, we're still working on it. We're okay. Thanks for jinxing us.
Yeah. Knock on something, padding.
He's doing. We just had a third down period that was excellent. He should have been 4 for 4. He's really good.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a rough patch somewhere, but the thing you like about him is that nothing really bothers the kid.
So, yeah.
It's good.
That's good.
Yeah, you doing okay?
Yeah, we're doing good. So I'll talk to you afterwards. Robbie said we'll talk afterwards. Thanks a lot.
Well, we're still recording.
Well, there's a Ken Wizenon interlude.
Yeah. We just had a Ken Wizenon sighting.
It's kind of cool to do a podcast on the sidelines of an NFL training camp practice. Do you think people heard the whistles and the horns?
I don't know. I think these microphones are good enough that they didn't pick them up.
Yeah, I hope they did. But you know what else? Can we just leave him with one thing?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the real interesting stories right now.
Yeah.
Okay, we're looking out at practice right now, all right? And standing here behind the defense is Dick LeBeau, the old master, I think he's 77 years old, and Ray Horton, who used to play for Dick LeBeau in Cincinnati and used to coach under him in Pittsburgh. There's Ray Horton, the defensive coordinator, and Dick LeBeau brought in to be the assistant head coach. And, you know, Robert, you know, if you're Ray Horton, you have to swallow your pride a little bit, you know? You thought that you had everything to yourself. And you thought this was going to be your defense. And then they bring in Dick LeBeau, and I think LeBeau was going to call the defenses on game day. It's a fascinating story, and how they're going to work together and how that's going to impact this defense. So we'll see.
Especially for a guy like Ray Horton, who had or either has or had head coaching aspirations.
Of course.
To now take a step back.
I mean, yeah.
Well, thanks, Peter.
Okay, Robert, it was good.
That's great stuff. And so you are headed to West Virginia now, which means that you're going to the Saints training camp, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and what are you expecting to see there?
I think the big question there to me is, how do you replace a Jimmy Graham, who defined what their offense could do for a number of years, and now you go from having one of the more dynamic pass-catching big men in the league at your disposal to Ben Watson, who's, you know, a good blocker.
Yeah, that's a polite way to put it. And you know what I think they're going to do in New Orleans? Because I've written some of my Saints preview. I went through my notes. I laid the groundwork. It's not due for a few more weeks, so I'm sure I'll keep working on it. But the more I look at this roster with Jimmy Graham gone, because at first I was thinking, okay, Jimmy Graham, you know, it's the same thing as Darren Sproles. They're getting rid of a playmaker because they believe that they can manufacture offense through the system. They don't need these more expensive, unique ball handlers. And that could be what the case is still. But I look at the one guy that they would not trade other than Drew Brees, reportedly was Brandon Cooks at wide receiver. He's a very horizontal weapon. He goes east and west. He can go north and south as well, but he has to be helped through the play design. If he's going east and west, he can separate and create his own yards. He's a similar type to DeSean Jackson, maybe even a little quicker. So I looked at him as a possibility. I think Breeze's arm strength is in decline. And I think this offensive line, especially they bring in Max Unger, you put him with Teron Armstead, and they draft Andres Pete, who I would expect will replace Zach Streep at right tackle fairly soon. That's a much more athletic offensive line than they've had before there. And in the past, the Saints have always had big, powerful offensive lines because they're a vertical team and they need to create a pocket for Breeze. Well, I think now if they're going to be more of an east and west team, they're going to move the pocket. I wouldn't be shocked to see them become a little bit more West Coast style system this year, a little more ball control and less downfield passing, which in that case explains that part of the reason they felt Graham would be expendable.
Yeah. Well, having toured essentially the NFC South this week with Carolina and Atlanta, I can tell you that you are not the first person I've heard say that Breeze's arm strength is in decline.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've heard some defensive players on both of those teams talk about it, you know, just in casual conversations, nothing where I would quote somebody. But I think that is starting to be recognized across the league. I wanted to go back to when you went to Napa Valley, I guess, a week ago, right?
A few days ago, yeah.
What did you think about Oakland? Always see kind of positive reports in the preseason about, you know, teams that end up going 3-13. But I hear buzz that some of the rookies and some of the younger players that Reggie McKenzie has acquired really are the real deal.
I think they're the real deal. Now, I don't know if that means this team is ready to win the AFC West, but and I watched every single snap of the Raiders on film last year, and at one point they were 0-10, and it never struck me that I was watching a winless team. They were never as bad as their record indicated. They had some players there a year ago obviously it didn't work out, and you know, they underachieved and all that kind of stuff. But this is a team that's already better than people realize to begin with. And the difference now is they've added, and I wrote this in the Raider preview, they've added Amari Cooper, as everybody knows, number 4 overall pick at receiver. They added Michael Crabtree. I think Kenbrell Tompkins will play a role for them because he was number 3 receiver in a lot of what I saw with their first unit the 3 days I spent at camp there. And what we're talking about, especially those first two guys, are quality wide receivers who can beat man coverage. And they have not had that in Oakland in years. They probably haven't had it since Tim Brown and Jerry Rice. Even when Randy Moss was there, he wasn't effective for them. So when you can beat man coverage on the perimeter, now your playbook opens up. And by the way, when you can't, your playbook completely shuts. And it's going to be a different Raiders offense because of that. And then they've got a guy that can throw him the ball in Derek Carr. And that offensive line was one of the best in the league at pass protection last year. Nobody noticed because why would they? But it's a much better Raiders offense overall. And then defensively, they're young, but they're playing in a simpler scheme. And so it's going to be more about speed and raw talent coming through. And I like Jason Tarver, their previous coordinator. I thought his scheme was good, but he put a lot on the plates of those young guys. And maybe Tarver's a guy that needs more veterans around him to do what he wants to do. Del Rio's not going to put as much on their plates, and I think they're going to succeed because of that.
Yeah, one player that you didn't mention, Khalil Mack, I think is probably the most important guy on that defense, maybe even on that team outside of Carr or Cooper. I was just so impressed after watching him last year, and it kind of stinks that these guys who play integral roles in stopping the run and are just short of getting to the quarterback in so many instances and cause such disruption and necessitate double teams, guys like Khalil Mack really don't get any attention paid. I thought that he should have been a widely recognized guy, a Pro Bowler as a rookie. I mean, I thought he was that good, but you don't know anything about him because he's in Oakland.
I agree with you 100%. He had 4 sacks on the season, and he and I had a really, really good conversation about this after the first day of camp. He's very easy to talk to, by the way. It's fun to talk football with.
Yeah.
And I said to him, you know, you could have 15 sacks this year, and everybody's going to think you made a dramatic jump in your second season, even if you don't improve at all. I think he will improve. And he understood what I was saying. He gets it. He was highly, highly productive, and it just for whatever reason, a variety of reasons, and he wasn't pleased about it, but, you know, he wasn't heartbroken. For a variety of reasons, it didn't translate into sacks. He had 8 drawn hold penalties, which is second most in the league, and that's almost as good as a sack. But if you look at in terms of week in and week out destructiveness, there were maybe only 2 or 3 defensive ends who were better than Khalil Mack last year as a rookie. So yeah. He is fun to watch. I think he's already a superstar, and it's just a matter of time until the numbers and then therefore the public perception reflects that. But he has lateral explosiveness, very quick hands, great physical body. You know, I don't know if he's got any fat on him at all. He did our interview with his shirt off, which was very intimidating. And I can't wait to watch him play this year. There's not a guy I'm more excited to see this season than Khalil Mack.
I love the juxtaposition between Mack, the 2-star recruit from the University of Buffalo, who is just killing it, versus Jadeveon Clowney, the number one player in the country coming out of high school, the number one pick in the draft, who has done absolutely nothing through, you could say, no fault of his own, just unlucky with these injuries. But I think it goes to show how the draft is such an enormous crapshoot at times. I mean, you couldn't find an analyst pre-draft that would have picked Khalil Mack over Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, it was seen as such a humongous drop-off after Clowney.
Yeah, and I forget about that because I wouldn't be surprised if Clowney's a guy that just never comes to fruition. I'm not hoping that for him, and I'm not predicting that for him, but he right now, that's what the evidence suggests. He's got these kind of these vague injuries that keep him out for long lengths of time. You know, he was a little bit of a mystery coming out of college, and I think there were whispers about how focused was he really in college. I guess they weren't even whispers. There was public criticisms at times. Mack is the polar opposite of that. He's stable. He's rock stable. And by the way, did you know it's actually called University at Buffalo?
I had no idea.
I didn't either. I learned that from him when I asked him what it was called. I said, is it University of Buffalo or Buffalo University? And they were both wrong.
I wonder how many times he's had to correct people on that.
He's pretty polite, so I don't think he's the type that would correct. The only reason he said it to me was because I asked him. But yeah. By this point, what's occurring to me now is I must have looked really stupid, because by this point he had put his shirt on in the conversation, and it was a University at Buffalo shirt.
Now, you were out in California for a while. I have a reliable source that tells me that you look like a can of tomatoes right now.
I was at Chargers camp. I forgot. So I had sunscreen, but I forgot to apply it. And so, yeah, I looked like I did, like a can of tomatoes. And like the inside of a tomato, you know, real shiny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw, you know, I saw Bill Musgrave, who I like quite a bit, and he's fun to talk football with. He's the Raiders' new offensive coordinator, and he's been around the league, and he's, you know, if you're a fan of an NFL team, Bill Musgrave's probably been your offensive coordinator for a year or two somewhere. And he, on the first day of practice, was totally sunburnt. And I wanted to ask him, you know, how in the hell did that happen to you? You've been to, like, how many training camps have you been to, and what were you expecting? What are some of the funny things that you've seen at camp? Or, if you still want to talk like actual football, which I guess some people care about, you know, what have been the highlights of? Tell us the other camps you've been to. So I went to San Diego and Oakland. That's it. I'm done. I got off easy on the camp tour. You've been in that little tiny van with everybody's body heat bearing down on you, driving long stretches of land from state to state. Tell us where you've been going and how you've survived it.
Well, the van is great. It's a Mercedes Sprinter. It's got a lot of room. It's got an Xbox. I've been playing Xbox with Emily Kaplan. She's actually pretty good at NHL. And
you guys have NHL Xbox in the middle of summer in a van?
Yeah, it's great. We started in Baltimore. Then we drove to Richmond, where Washington plays, Spartanburg, South Carolina, and then Atlanta. This was 3 days ago, and this is the one that I wanted to talk to you about before we sign off here. We sat down with Dan Quinn in his office overlooking the practice field, which is gorgeous, and Peter asked Dan, could you give us two or three defensive players that you think are going to have a little bit different roles and going to make an enormous impact? And Dan was kind enough to go through the position groups for us.
Can I guess who you think? Can I guess some of them?
Please. Why don't you guess the defensive back?
All right, with defensive back, Desmond Southward.
No, well, it was Desmond Trufant.
Okay, the other Desmond. Yeah, I'm thinking Desmond Southward. I thought Trufant would be too obvious because that's clearly their best defensive back, and he's going to play anywhere for him, I would think.
Well, the big change and what we're going to end up writing about and what Quinn told us is that, you know, he got hired a couple days later. He calls up Desmond. And Desmond said that Quinn is going, hey, I think you're a great player, but here's all the things that I want you to work on. And the main thing was learning how to play press and learning proper press technique. He didn't feel that Desmond had it, and he told them and he told us, we want you on the line as much as humanly possible, as much as the situation allows. So that's one change for Desmond Trufant, who has been a pretty solid corner in his own right. And now I think that they're going to ask him to do some different things, challenge him to be, you know, more of a Richard Sherman than he has been in the past.
You know, we'll see how that goes. He's got great short area agility, and his style of play has really worked for him. Sherman's much bigger than Trufant. And the reason I guess Southward is because he's the safety that – they're still converting Desmond Southward from safety to corner, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Okay, so that was Desmond Trufant. And then did he give you a linebacker?
He did. He liked Justin Durant, and the ability to cover tight ends, sees him as still fast, still athletic, despite being on the wrong side of 30 and having several injuries.
He's 29 right now. He's 29. Oh. He'll be 30 in September.
Ah, excuse me. But several injuries over the course of his career that have kind of derailed him, but he sees a lot of potential in him playing the weak side.
Yeah, and I watched film with the coach over the offseason, and a way you know that a guy is a good player, what's really cool is when you're watching one team and a guy from another team gets in your line of vision and keeps, you know, you keep noticing him. And Justin Durant was one of those guys. And the coach thought the same thing independently as well on multiple occasions. So when he was healthy in Dallas last season, he flashed. He wasn't a superstar, but there were cases where he flashed. So I'm not surprised to hear that Dan Quinn likes Justin Durant and that they're going to be using him in coverage too. So he'll kind of play the KJ Wright role then. Is that what we're thinking?
Exactly. Yeah. One of these DeAndre Levy types. And I always bring up DeAndre Levy when we're talking about these slim outside linebackers who can potentially cover tight ends and even cover wide receivers on the slot in a pinch. You're going to hear now the downpour that's hitting my area of Tennessee. So we might have to call it early.
Wait, it's raining on you?
Oh, yeah, it's real loud.
All right, well, then let's wrap up real quick. Tell us who the defensive lineman was, and then I'll get us out of here.
Well, I think it's obvious. It's Vic Beasley. He said he was in love with him from the first time he saw him on tape, and what he is so excited to work with and use as a baseline is that quick get off the ball that the first rounder has there.
Good. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up then. If we want your feedback, by the way. If you've been listening and you made it this far in the show, we appreciate that. Use the hashtag MMQB podcast, and you can tweet the Robert, who's at Robert Klemko, that's K-L-E-M-K-O, or myself at Andy_Benoit, that's B-E-N-O-I-T. And, give us your criticism. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, because this is our preseason too. We're getting ready for the regular season. You can subscribe on iTunes and never miss an episode. Next week, we'll have more with the training camp travels. More Peter King for us, I assume, Robert?
Yeah, we hook back up with him in Cleveland in about 4 days. So we'll let you know everything you need to know about Johnny Manziel.
Perfect. And then for all SI.com podcasts, just go SI.com/podcast, and there's a whole trove of them. For Robert Klemko, this is Andy Benoit at the MMQB Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.